It's all about love today, gang. So we're going to start the love by talking about Black History Month, and we're going to be bringing in our first guest, the legendary Phil Wilson. I picked that song for you.
I like that.
You know who that is? That's Miss Etta James.
That's right, that's
I love Miss Etta James.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell it like it is. Phil, I think I've known you, I don't even want, longer than Jason has been alive.
That's true.
That is for
sure. That's a long time.
I think, you know, here in Southern California, you have this spot in the movement's history, a legacy of work, as being probably, I think, the most prominent African-American face in Southern California that's been working on the movement, what, 30 years? Yeah.
Well, longer than that, actually, because I'm going to be 64, and so I started when I was 24, so
40 years. Exactly. Definitely older than Jason.
It's close, but yeah.
Black History Month happens every February. And I know racism isn't over.
It certainly
isn't. It isn't over. And I know that the African-American experience and the LGBT experience are linked. They're not overlapping. They're linked. And just I'd love to have your thoughts about it.
Well, you know, I think that the African-American experience and the LGBTQI experience now are actually, I would speak stronger than just overlap. I think it's more of a Venn diagram, you know. Barbara Smith, said about the women's movement, the juncture between the Black movement, the Black nationalist movement, and the women's movement for Black women, where she said, all of the women are white and all the Blacks are men, but some of us are brave. And that speaks to also the intersectionality in the LGBTQI community as it relates to Black folks, and now we're celebrating, Black History Month. And I guess the question that I've been asked is, why should LGBTQI folks celebrate Black History Month? And I think that it's pretty simple. It's because it is our history. On so many ways, I think about and my political views and strategically, I always think about what is the right thing to do, and I always think about also what is the most effective thing to do. And this is a place where we can have both those conversations. We should be involved in Black History Month, in the same way that we should be involved in efforts to celebrate women and efforts to celebrate Latinos and efforts to acknowledge the HIV/AIDS epidemic, because it is a part of our history. It is the right thing to do. We should be involved because it is also strategically the smart thing to do. That we need to decide literally every day, and it's been something that as a community we've been struggling with for the entire life of our community, who are we? Are we the special interest group that we are accused of being? Or are we a people that's striving for the best that this country can be? And that is an inclusive country. That is a country that celebrates all of us. Strategically, we need to celebrate and acknowledge our diversity because it sets us apart. It says who we are. It makes us more effective in our efforts to talk about equality in an LGBTQI context.
Very nice. Baird Rustin, who was the designer of the 1963 March on Washington, gay man, recently got pardoned by the governor of the state of California, Gavin Newsom, for a lewd conduct arrest that happened that, in essence, tanked his career. I think he's probably one of the greatest examples of somebody that had both hats, but it was a different time.
Well, what's interesting about it, and it is a lesson, that when Baird went to Martin Luther King Jr., and began to work, as a central figure in the Black Civil Rights Movement, Dr. King knew who Baird was, and Coretta knew who Baird was, And I would argue, two things. Number one, when Strom Thurmond came out to attack Baird on the eve of the March on Washington, Dr. King didn't back away. None of those supporters back away. And it was a different time, and they could have. And quite frankly, now there have been experiences over time where human beings who happen to be leaders had clay feet when it came to these important decisions.
I hate to stop you right there, but coming up next, we're going to hear what point two was, because Phil Wilson set 2 points right after this, gang. We're talking to Phil Wilson here on Channel Q. I know, my young millennial, you have no idea who that is singing, do you?
Not at all.
I know you don't. This is what kills me. That's the incredible Marvin Gaye singing Right On, which was a song about that period of time. We're talking to Phil Wilson, legendary activist in the LGBTQI community and African-American community. Thanks, Phil, for coming back.
My pleasure.
Yeah. You were talking about two things, Bayard Rustin, Strom Thurmond, and then you were about to get to your second point. So.
Well, the second point is that, you know, Bayard always understood who he was. Now, and so that also speaks to why we should celebrate Black History Month and, quite frankly, all of our communities that are part of our big tent that is the LGBTQI community. And because he understood who he was, you know, he actually, you know, really was, you know, represented a symbol on how to celebrate your whole self. You know, and you know, I think about Pat Parker, you know, when asked, you know, what would be a revolution? And she said, when I could take all of myself in a room, and that when I go into an LGBT, well, in that time when she said, when I went into a gay and lesbian space, that I didn't have to downplay my blackness. Mm. And when I went into a black poetry reading, I didn't have to leave my queerness behind. Now, and part of our strength is as a community, you know, is really about lifting up all boats, you know, and the Bayard Rustin story is about that. The Pat Parker story is about that. The Barbara Smith story is about that. You know, the other reason, you know, for us to celebrate Black History Month is so much of who we are is rooted in the contributions, you know, of Black people and others in this movement. Where would we be, you know, without Pat Parker? Where would we be without Barbara? Where would we be without, you know, Audre Lorde? Where would we be without Reggie Williams or Marlon Riggs? You know, we can go on and on and on and on. And so, you know, this kind of celebration is an opportunity for us to think about who we are and to declare that to the world, and also to kind of push forward, you know, in, you know, all the various alliances that we need to be a part of, genuinely a part of, in order to protect, you know, equality on the basis of sexual orientation and all the other reasons why we want to create an inclusive society.
Mm. One of the benefits of you and I having like 40 years of doing this work is we have a timeline, we have a history, we have a breadth and of knowledge in which to draw. And maybe that's part of just getting older, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think young millennials sit around and think about the stuff we're talking about right now? Do you think they ponder about their forefathers and foremothers and, you know, and the contributions that were made and where we all are and find ourselves today?
Absolutely not, but I don't think we did either, John.
That's very true. You know?
So I don't think that when we were 24 and 25 and 26, we were thinking about things in that way. I think we had a unique experience, and that was that we were living in a plague.
Yeah.
You know, I was 24, technically, I guess I was 23 when the AIDS epidemic or GRID actually happened, you know, initially. But my awareness of it, you know, I was 24. I was infected when I was 24. Mm-hmm. You know, and that changed the trajectory of all of our lives.
Yes.
And certainly it demanded for us to have a perspective that maybe some millennials don't have because they have not needed to have. And thank God for that.
Yeah. You know, I think, and that's a really good point. When we were, because I'm just a few years behind you, when we were in our early 20s, and normally there's a passing of a baton from generation to generation to generation, but the generation right before us and the one right before that were suddenly stricken with grave illness, and there was not a lot of time to figure out the baton passing.
That's right.
Instead, it felt like we were just learning on the job, on
Absolutely.
The job training in the moment.
Absolutely.
And now, being at a point, you know, 60, and looking back at all that, and thinking about things in a more contemplative way about what it all means. Mm-hmm. And I guess there's a, like you said, there is a part of it's about, you know, knowing what's right. And I think we all know what's right. And then there's another side, there's a practical, pragmatic side about what's possible today. Mm-hmm. Maybe not in this moment, but for the future. And so I think that's maybe that's just part of the wisdom of getting older. Mm-hmm. Like you and I, here we are. I don't have a presidential candidate for March 3rd. You don't either. You know, we're just going to, I'm going to go in and vote whatever my heart and conscience say. But there was a time I would have picked a camp, been in there battling, fighting in the primaries, going to Democratic Party events. That's not me at this point.
I do think there's, no, I think that that has been me, and that might be me in the future. This year is a unique year. You know, one of the things that I do find disturbing and is that I've been involved in political work and presidential election level work for a long, 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 long time. And there have always been primary seasons, you know, and I do not recall a primary season on the Democratic side that was as vitriolic as some things are happening during this primary season. Mm. And I find it very disturbing. But at the same time, I think that it is born out of a panic, you know, that people are so afraid and that drives intensity. The truth of the matter is, though, that we cannot win from a place of fear. Now, we have to fundamentally understand and claim now that we will be victorious. And I think if we can do that, no matter who the candidate is, if we can do that, now, if we can believe that our candidate, whoever you're picking in the primary, is going to be victorious, then I think that it reduces the need to attack, other folks who believe that a different candidate is going to be victorious. Mm. Now, and I think that, you know, part of it is a perception that I certainly share, I assume that you share, that the stakes are very, very high. Mm-hmm. Now, and as a result of that, you can take two paths. One is to say the stakes are high and I'm standing in the place of unity. Or you can say the stakes are so high, you know, that we have to be all in with quote unquote the right candidate. Mm. And of course the right candidate is always the candidate that you support, who you cannot see any of their weaknesses, and you can only see the flaws in the other candidates. Quite frankly, I think many folks in this community are aligned with, on the Democratic side of the aisle, the truth of the matter is that that ideology is exactly how the Trumpers feel. That they are blind to the failings of their candidate and think that he can do no wrong. And where has that gotten us? How is that working for us? And is that actually a strategy that we want to embrace?
Really good point, yeah. I have to ask you, at the center of the Black Civil Rights Movement, for more than 100 years, there's been a notion of spirituality, God. The church has been at this core of the civil rights movement. Is that same sort of dynamic at play with LGBT African Americans? Is there a spiritual
absolutely.
Core? There is.
Absolutely. No, I think that the thing that I think many people kind of forget or don't understand is as an openly gay Black man living with AIDS, I don't experience my life in a compartmentalized way, you know? And so someone once asked Marjorie Hill, my good friend in New York, who is the Black LGBTQI, actually they said back then, who's the Black lesbian and gay Martin Luther King Jr.? And Marjorie looked at them and she said, Martin Luther King Jr.
That's awesome.
And so all of the truths that are for Black folks, they transcend sexual orientation and gender and what have you. And quite frankly, I think that if we really sit down and think about it, there's some of that that is true within our larger LGBTQI tent as well.
Mm. Our time has come to an end. I hate this because I feel like I'd sit and talk to you for an hour, and I could and should. Phil, thank you for coming by.
My pleasure.
I mean, gang, if you were listening, wherever you were, those were pearls of wisdom being cast at our feet right there. I so appreciate you, Phil Wilson.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Coming up next, gang, we'll have Dr. Ken Howard talking about the meaning of Valentine's Day for LGBT here on Channel Q.